Misquoted Bible Passages, Christian Hymnody, Confessional Lutheranism, Christianity and Culture. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
Ad honorem sancte et individue trinitatis, ad exaltationem fidei catholice, et vitae Christiane incrementum, autoritate Domini nostri Iesu Christi, beatorum apostolorum Petri et Pauli ac nostra, matura deliberazione preabita, et divina opes epius implorata, ac de plurimorum fratum nostrum consilio, beatos Ioannem vicesimum tertium, et Ioannem Paulum secundum, sanctos esse decernimus et definimus, ac santorum catalogo adscribimus, statuentes eos in universa ecclesia, inter santos pia devotione recoli debere, in nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti.
That's the voice of Pope Francis declaring the canonization of Pope John the 23rd and Pope John Paul the 2nd in Rome on Sunday. What does canonization mean? Where did it come from? And how is it connected to the Roman Catholic practice of keeping and venerating relics? Joining us to answer those questions on this Thursday afternoon, May the 1st, Dr. David Coles. He's Associate Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Coles, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thanks for inviting me to be on.
What has the Roman Catholic Church done in canonizing Pope John Paul II and John the 23rd?
From the confessional Lutheran standpoint, of course, our Lutheran confessions deny the validity of the invocation of the saints in the Augsburg Confession, and also the use of relics in the church, and so we cannot be in favor of what the church has done here. Of course, we realize that these popes that were chosen to be canonized, John the 23rd and John Paul the 1st, were remarkable leaders in many ways that did some good things too. But, you know, as far as the actual canonization step, it would not be something that we could approve of.
So have they kind of, in layman's parlance, been declared full-fledged saints in the Roman Catholic way of thinking of the kind of the hierarchy of the church and sainthood?
Yes, I think that the church has used the procedures for canonizing a person that were established back in about the 13th century, whereby the church was quite careful, the papacy especially, right, when they began to take over the process, they would interview people and gather evidence, collect a dossier of documents with regard to the possible canonization of a person. And so I think they followed those same steps in the case of these two popes. So I saw on television, for example, in one of the Spanish-speaking channels, how they were interviewing this lady from Nicaragua, and she said that she was dying of, I don't know, cancer or something, and she was healed by John Paul II.
So give us some details. You mentioned a moment ago the 13th century. Where does the tradition of practice of canonization come from? How did it develop?
Well, I think we can go back to the period of the in the early church. You have the great admiration for the martyrs, and so in the before the legalization of Christianity by Constantine in 313, then there were some quite violent persecutions by the Roman government, by several Roman emperors, and many Christians then heroically refused to hand over the scriptures to be burned, and deny their Christian faith. At that time, then, the practice of going to the tombs of these martyrs began, perhaps an imitation of the pagan practices, that they also like to go to holy places. And that's how you begin to get shrines and the popularity of saints. And so in the Middle Ages, one of the most common types of literature were the lives of the saints, the vitae. And so these Athanasius, the famous church father, wrote a life about the life of Anthony, the founder of monasticism in Egypt. And so that's when you begin to get these stories about the saints, and that practice continues. And then at first, the canonization process is sort of informal and is up to the local bishops. But as the papacy became stronger in the 12th and 13th centuries, and they tried to centralize the process, and they really take over the process then around the year 1200.
So what purpose does it serve, looking at it historically, what purpose does it serve for the Roman Catholic Church to occasionally canonize popes or other martyrs or other people of note in its history?
Well, I suppose that there's always a lot of devotion to these individuals, and these popes, I think, were truly popular, right? And so John the 23rd is credited with sort of opening the windows of the Catholic Church to the modern age, right? And bringing in the Mass, putting the Mass in the vernacular languages, so that, you know, we could say that was a good idea. And Pope John Paul II traveled to a lot of different places and helped to overthrow communism, allegedly, right, because of his Polish background. And so looking at our confessions, we can see that the Melanchthon writes that in the Apology that we approve of honoring the saints, right? And we can see in our liturgical practice that we sometimes observe the certain saints, right, mostly biblical, right? And so why do we do that? We do it for thanksgiving. It's a way to give thanks for the way that God acts and Christ acts in the lives of Christians. And we do it as something that strengthens our faith. And the third reason would be as the imitation of the saints. We could see that this idea is biblical, too. So in one sense, we don't totally... we want to be Christocentric. That was the complaint then in the Reformation and the denial of the invocation of saints. But then we can see that honoring saints, or we might not call them saints in the Lutheran Church, but we remember C.F.W. Walther and many other notable Christians in our own tradition and as important people too.
Dr. David Coles is our guest. We're talking about canonization and relics in the Roman Catholic system of theology. It's Thursday afternoon, May the 1st. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
The dangers inherent in particularly Lutheran Reformation Christians trying to be Baptists in their worship approach.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues, Etc., Making the Case Conference.
Just at the moment, a lot of people, Baptists and evangelicals included, are looking for more substance in their worship life. Many of them are looking to helpful liturgies and the hymns of the church to bring content to their services. Lutherans are throwing that stuff off the deck of the boat as fast as they can do it. So there'll be some comments, some discussion about why that's a dangerous avenue for Lutherans to take.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas, Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California, Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming, Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas, Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming, Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California, St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa, Redeemer Lutheran, Caquabeca Falls, Ontario, Canada, St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click Support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click Support, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Roman Catholic process of canonization and of relics. Dr. David Coles is our guest, Associate Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now that these two have been canonized, Dr. Coles, in that system of theology, are they now to be addressed in prayer or their help sought by the Catholic faithful?
Well, I think that the distinction between worship and veneration is an important one that was made back in the iconoclastic controversy in the Middle Ages. So I think official Catholic position would be that no one is asked to worship these popes as substitutes for Christ. Now, I use the word invocation because that's the word that the confessions use. Whether that word is actually being used currently by the Catholic Church, I'm not quite sure. But from what you report, then, how did you put it again?
They're to be venerated was the language that was in the official statement.
I think so. I think even the Virgin Mary, right? We Protestants complain about the Catholics, worshiping Mary or something like that. But I think that there's a distinction there. And, Catholics can certainly be Christocentric, too, in many cases. So I haven't really looked at the all of the literature that has come out with regard to the canonization of these two popes. But, I can believe that they are careful in distinguishing the attitude that the Catholics are supposed to have towards these two canonized popes.
What is the relationship between canonization and another thing that is being talked a lot about in the press, and that is the relics of these two men, or the relics that are maintained by the Roman Catholic Church? What are relics in that system of theology, and what's the relationship to sainthood?
Well, relics are holy things. At first, then, as I mentioned about the tombs of the martyrs, and the custom of going to those tombs, then the relics were often the bones and the remains of these saints. And so that would be the first. So the word relic probably is, I think if you analyze it etymologically, it's sort of whatever is left of the body. But it has also had a more broader definition to include also other holy objects that were not necessarily the body of a dead saint. For example, the cross. It was believed, I think, starting in the 4th century, that a piece of the cross on which Christ was crucified was still in existence, and that became a relic. It was put in the church in Jerusalem and was venerated, and we can see even in our Lutheran liturgical calendar, you have the festival of the Holy Cross in September, and how so the Catholic Church took up this observation of the cross in the Middle Ages, and the Lutheran Luther and the Lutheran reformers decided to keep it because obviously the cross is central to our faith, and Paul talks about the cross in many passages of his epistles.
By the time of the Lutheran Reformation, the system of relics had become something of a business and industry. In fact, one of Luther's political protectors, Frederick the Wise, at least for a major part of his time, I believe, had one of the largest collections of genuine relics, as he would say, in all of Western Europe. What did the reformers have to say about the practice of relics?
In the Small Called Articles, Luther lists a series of things that are he considers are idolatry. And so he has, for example, he talks about masses for the, well, purgatory is the first thing he talks about. Then he talks for the masses for the dead. He talks about pilgrimages, confraternities, and the next one is relics. And so in that sense, then he, let me read to you what he says. In this connection, so many manifest lies and so much nonsense has been invented about the bones of dogs and horses that even the devil has laughed at such knavery. Even if there were some good in them, relics should long since have been condemned. They are neither commanded nor commended. They are utterly unnecessary and useless. Worst of all, however, is the claim that relics effect indulgences in the forgiveness of sin, and that, like the Mass, etc., their use is a good work and a service of God. So it's not a very positive, despite Frederick the Wise's then fondness for relics and the popularity of relics in the Middle Ages, and even, you know, in the modern period, I suppose, in some parts of the Catholic Church, then they don't seem to be the best way to express our Christian faith.
So you mentioned earlier on the biblical way of understanding the saints, a proper way of using that term that avoids the errors of the Roman Catholic tradition and practice. How is it that we ought to regard the term saints, and then how should we regard those saints who have gone before us, especially those of note that the Church sets aside time to remember?
I think we should regard them as examples of faith. So we remember them sort of like in Hebrews 11, where we can see that the author of that epistle lists many of the believers of the Old Testament. So why does he talk about the Abraham and many others? Because of their faith. And so we can also honor the faith, for example, with the Virgin Mary. We can look at the Magnificat, and as Luther did, himself did, right? And we see her great faith in receiving the message of the angel Gabriel. And so we can extrapolate that from the biblical personalities to people in church history as well, all the way to, you know, our times. And we can find examples of faith in the Lutheran Church, and also recognize, you know, notable Christians in before the rise of the Lutheran Church and in other Christian traditions of our own time.
And then with about a minute, can we still, looking in from the outside, as Lutherans say, and I think you alluded to this earlier in our conversation, we can say of Pope John Paul II and John the 23rd, look, these were men to be admired for all sorts of legitimate human reasons, and in some sense for ecclesiastical reasons as well. They were faithful to their tradition. And so much we share with the Roman Catholics in terms of sound doctrine, in spite of our profound differences. Can we look on them and say, you know, they are meant to be admired and remembered and commended for their service, both secular and spiritual?
I think so. I think here in the seminary, I teach medieval church history, so I talk a lot about the popes in the Middle Ages. And you know, we know that in some one sense, you have the idea of the papacy as the Antichrist, so you're a little cautious about, you know, having a positive appraisal of popes, but you can see that some popes really were very good. And going back to, say, Leo the First, and his Christology was really adopted at the Council of Chalcedon. And so by the same token, then, I think, as you said, we can see a lot of good things that John the 23rd and John Paul the Second did during their long pontificates. And we can admire them and be thankful for the contributions they have made to improve the Catholic Church and to improve the situation of Christianity in general in our own time.
Dr. David Coles is Associate Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Coles, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana just had a big day yesterday. They had their call service and the assignment of vicars into the church. They're making good on their promise to train and form pastors in the solid confessional Lutheran theology and practice. That's what they do at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You can find them on the web, ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or give them a toll-free call, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. When we come back, we're going to talk about reading and understanding the Gospels, like sitting down to a seven-course meal. Pastor Ryan Wendt will be our guest, and we'll be studying Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer in the last half hour. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.